the guests used to walk over, of course, visit the zoo, and then climb on across the railway line and go straight up to the Lapston Hotel that was above for morning tea or afternoon tea. Of course, that's now the Air Force headquarters. They purchased the property in 1949. But it was a very popular guest house up there. Actually, I had my wedding reception up there. But it sold out, I think. He probably saw ahead a little bit on the holiday trade. That was something else. Caravans started, as I said before, and motels. That was just quite a big change, really, in the life of people in the guest house. And of course, there were jokes about the fires that started up in a lot of guest houses. So they ended up with insurance money. Mm. But however, we didn't get to having a fire or a sale. We decided we would try out having people here on a more permanent basis. Not too permanent, mind you, because those days, if people were in your place, you couldn't get them out unless you were giving service, you see. So we'd supply them with tea and toast in the morning and milk. We still had the cows. We had, I think, their linen. We gave them their linen and blankets and so forth. And they had a community kitchen.
Did their own cooking,
you see, to cut down on that work. Mm. It certainly cut down on work. I still had somebody to come and help the general clean-up of the place, but I had three children, and I don't know how I kept them quiet with people around, and yet you just face what's around you then, you sort of carry on. And then I had a fourth child, the one you met, Chris, mm-hmm. in 55. But mentally, you have people's problems then, and it became a very difficult time for me.
Did you have all your children locally, in the local hospital? Or?
No, I didn't. Of course, I was in Sydney when the first one was born. I had, he was born at the George V. Actually, I remember that was quite a delight because I was upstairs. I had what they called a semi-private room, just the two. And you looked out the window down across to the colleges, the university colleges, and it was peaceful and beautiful. And to give the army sisters a rest from nursing the men, the sick men, they came in took on nurses' roles, looking after the babies, with a civilian sister as their superior. Mm-hmm. And I said to one, how did she like coming in? Oh, she said, it's a great change after nursing men for years and in the Middle East and so forth, to have these babies. And she was cooing over a baby. You know, I think they found they needed that return to the feminine duties. Yes, so they were delightful to be with. Mm.
And you went back there for your other children, did you?
No, I had a doctor who happened to be a Catholic doctor, although he told me, he didn't believe what the Bible said about women should be brought forth in suffering and pain. I don't know if I've got the quote just right. He didn't believe that. Mm. and knowing I knew that he was of the Catholic religion. So he arranged that I went to St Margaret's, which I found quite...
In Sydney.
Penrith Hospital was very inadequate in those days, just a little cottage hospital. It's now the Governor Phillip Hospital for, mostly aged or long-term illnesses and physiotherapy. I forget the year they moved to the Nepean, but I did go to Sydney for all my babies. I remember in 55 my husband was ill then. He'd been wounded in the hip and the spine was coming against him at the time, and I went off in the night by ambulance.
All the way to Sydney?
Yeah, all the way to Sydney. Yeah. Well, I'd been all the way to Sydney for the other three, and of course I was up there for the first. But I know one of the lads working came home about midnight, just before I went off. And he wouldn't believe that I'd had a baby by the morning when they told him, because he said, "Oh, but I saw her last night at 12 o'clock, a few hours ago."
Weren't that doctors for other emergency?
Oh, well, yes, we had local doctors then. There weren't very many doctors then, but, I suppose you've got that detail elsewhere, 4 or 5, something like that.
And how did you feel living here in those days? Did you have a feeling of isolation being so rural?
Oh, no. Remember, I grew up in a rural area.
Yeah.
And, of course, Sydney was very exciting for the young. It is.
Yeah.
There's so much going on. And there was art then that I was interested in, and being a student. But I don't know whether being a city person would make an attitude different, but I loved, and I used to tease my husband. I loved the area, I should say, and I used to tease my husband that I saw how lovely it was, and that's where I want to bring up my children. But it does hurt to see what's happened to it, really, because here's this beautiful alluvial soil that should have been left for cultivation, when you know how arid so much of Australia is. But we had the very, very wet years, and the oranges got the mould in the root rot, and they were making the rates too high for people to keep up with. And I think some of the earlier farmers sort of approached the government, and suddenly it was zoned. It was actually zoned for a great many more factories all across this side, where the high school is as well. But they had that changed, luckily, I think, because another government department wanted to set up a high school in the early 60s there, and they didn't put the factories there. But looking at the earlier map, which some people didn't do, and when they came down and found land was further subdivided, they said, "Oh, well, we built it out here. We could see rabbits hopping around. You know, we don't want the built-up flats, and we don't want this." And I thought, why didn't they ever look at the zoning plans if that's what they thought was going to happen? But I know my youngest son used to trudge home from school and say, "I don't want this to happen. I don't want to be a city slicker."
So it's affected the younger generation as well.
Oh, yes. Yes, it hurts them, because they had a wonderful life growing up. There was a creek there, and, of course, they wouldn't go off the property. They didn't need to, mind you. And they'd slide down those banks. There were thousands of frogs, and you'd hear the lovely little tw- twinkling voices at night of the frogs. No, it's absolutely silent now. The frogs have gone, which rather makes your hair stand on end, thinking of the poisons that must be coming down that creek that stops the frogs. Yes. I mean, they are like the canaries in the mines. They're indicating something, aren't they, that your creeks are dead. Yes. Which is very sad, I think. But of course, somebody up in the city decides, yes, there's a railway line there, that's the commuting problem solved, we'll go on and build. But it's a heartache as far as I'm concerned. There are only about 300 houses. Sometimes after my husband's death, I count houses in my mind, and there were only about 300 there in the early 60s, I think.
Really?
Yes. As I say, all this... Well, the 68 bushfire is a good indicator. There was smoke... I think it was... it was the end of November, wasn't it? One day, there was a fire along that range. Actually, looking out this window here, you could see the range from Currajong right to the other side of the river.
What can you see now?
Yes, you can't see it. Well, yes, you can see glimpses of the mountains. That wretched house, like an aeroplane hangar across there, blots out the beautiful gap in the mountains that you could see just sitting there. And the sun would play and it would go purple and blue and green. It was lovely. It was like an opal, the way that... Well, I resented it very much when it's only recently he built this awful aeroplane hangar. The heritage officer from the Penrith Council now tells me that they've brought in or bringing in laws that if an old heritage place has a particular aspect that belongs to that place, that they will keep it clear. I said, now you tell me. Yes, now that hideous place. Mind you, we've planted trees and banana palms, which he doesn't like, but my son said, oh, well, when he takes down that top, we'll cut down the banana palms, which is a bit naughty, but there you are.
Have that sense of the encroaching...
Oh, yes. I was laughing the other day saying when... Because I had to... The rates get so high. And we had actually a letter from the council saying now's the time to put in your subdivision plan so you know you're not going to get any rural rating anymore when that happens. And so you're forced to sell. It's not a case of wanting to. And I don't think many of the original owners, farmers here... had it much of a deal. I know the price I got very soon wouldn't buy one block now. And I thought I'd do up the place, you know, with the money. But by the time I've paid off mortgages and put some guttering around the roof, which needs doing again, your money's gone. Mm. And it wouldn't buy one block now. Mm. Wouldn't buy a quarter of it.
All these houses around Beach Street, they're all very recently built by the look of
them. Well, they were built in... They started in the 70s. I mean, the land was subdivided in the 70s, but it took really till the end of the 70s for them to go. And all the way up to Hunter Street, that was the same. Well, I did get to the bushfires and then I've talked myself away. Yeah. In 68, the bushfire started up and they stopped it. And then they left embers smoking and the high wind was predicted for the next day. Well, it came and it was a most destructive bushfire. It burnt as far as your eye could see along the mountain there, right to the river it went. And then it came down. You couldn't see what was happening because it was so thick with smoke. I didn't know the drama that had taken place at the high school during the day, where it, people were evacuating from the mountains and being put up at the high school. And much to one of my son's delight, they brought ducks and so forth, and the ducks were dirtying all over the school floor. But I couldn't really see what was happening, and I was felt quite safe because, now this is 68, it was ploughed all around. I'd only that week had the man in and ploughed right around to put some crop in. And so I thought, oh, I've got all that ploughed ground, I felt safe. But then it burnt right down opposite, through the grasslands and the grass in the road and through the orchards, right opposite here, almost to the back of the gallery. Do you know where the Lewis Gallery is? Yes. Well, to the back of the gallery. So that just says to you, well, in late 68... there was no build-up of houses. You really need those little milestones to yes. remember just how clear it was of houses.
Did you do your shopping around this area, or did you go into Penrith?
Well, of course. Well, there wasn't a great deal of shopping available. There was a little shop up on Russell Street highway crossing there, where the lights are now. There was a baker's shop there. From the time I remember, from the just before the 40s, the baker delivered all around Emu Plains. First of all, a cart and horse, and then a truck. And I remember one baker would leave the gate open, and then we'd have cows out and. Well, that became a trouble when some of the subdivisions started, because the cows would wander into their gardens, yes. However, there was a little fruit stall in front of where the shopping centre is now, a little fruit stall there. They sort of stretched out along the mile and a half or a couple of miles from the mountain to the railway there. There was a little fruit stall and small goods at what they call Old Mortimer House, halfway up between the garage and the station. And there was another one opposite the hotel, fruit stall. Then a little shop started up. I think about the 60s, there was a little shop started up in one of the older houses, and then they moved on and built that big shopping part there. That takes us into the 60s. But for the guest house, of course, they just rang up their order.
Delivered.
Yes, there was Moran and Cato's used to supply here. As a matter of fact, they said during the 40s, that if it weren't for Lapston Hotel and this guest house here, they wouldn't have much of business at all. You know, that this was the biggest business. We'd have the meat delivered and the vegetables delivered, but they'd sometimes go and buy extra little things from the stalls, although they had flowers in the garden, they'd buy flowers from Mrs. Chapel, who had a lovely garden halfway up the highway there, and they had flowers all through the house and on the tables in the guest house days. Well, that's the 40s.
So what do you do now for shopping? Do you go into Penrith or do you shop locally?
Well, for some businesses, we had to go into Penrith, but I avoided as much as possible and go over here to the Emu Plains shopping. But
it's so busy.
There are some things, you can't get, unfortunately, this side. Also, I wouldn't go in there. It's very hot shopping. There's so much, cement and buildings. And Penrith's a very hot place. They're only just waking, well, accepting now that the heat does build up here, although, you know, the ordinary lay person been trying to tell them for years that it's too hot a place for building up too much. But they never should have built at Emu Plains, just below a dam. The dam was being built here in the 40s. We had some of the surveyors staying here, I think, in 1950. Yes, in 1950 there were a lot of the surveyors that was surveying. There was a rope line across Emu Plains running right up to the dam.
Warragamba.
Yes, to the Warragamba Dam. You know, it had tripods like the electricity tripods that are there now, not quite as tall, of course, to hold the cables going right over to the far side of Emu Plains to McCann's Island where they had all the cobbles. And they'd load up these great buckets of with cobbles, and it'd move, it, you know, I suppose they had a big machine or something that it'd the flying fox, they called it. It'd go across the river and right up to Warragamba Dam. That gave a lot of work at the time. People worked at the McCann's Island, a lot of employment there. Then the lot of New Australians, as they called them, then were coming in. I remember we had quite a lot of Italians here in... I think it was the beginning of 52, there was a sort of a recession then, and they landed here, and then there were no jobs. Mm. And I think there was an English Italian in Penrith who rang up and asked if they could, we could take them in 52.
What, as a cook or something?
No, we could put them up. If we could put them up, you know, at a cut price or something. And my husband would go out with him and try and get fine jobs. I know the car had broken down, and he went round, borrowed bicycles and went round with them. Although he was pressed for time, he didn't have that much time. And he, I think it was, might have been the end of 52, because we'd given up the guest house. It might have even been 53. I had a son, this is the way you've got to mark time, in November 51, and he was about 12 months. That would make it 52 when they arrived, because he'd dance around for them in that dance hall, and they used to think he was lovely. And they were a nice lot of boys. Some of them would be been school teachers at home, and they were all very sorry for themselves, though. Mm. And
they'd come out as migrants, and
yes, they couldn't get a job. But then they that only lasted a short while, and they all went off and got jobs and moved. Some went up to Candos and earned very big money, and they'd come back for quite some time to see my husband and show them their gleaming cars and so forth, because he'd been very kind. He was very kind to... I think a lot of these returned soldiers aren't given for the credit for their kindness to their enemies, really. I don't go so... It's harder. The Japanese are harder, and I don't know how he'd have felt there, because... Well, he died from his war injuries by early 64, February 64. But I remember the Germans that came out to work with Utah, the American firm. They built the powerhouse there because Warragamba Dam hadn't opened then, and they needed the extra power for the electric railway line that went through. They built the, you know where the powerhouse is now?
Yes.
Fire Museum is at the powerhouse, yes. Well, because they were putting electrifying the railway line. And that provided a lot of work. I think they did start after that putting it up to Katoomba, didn't they? Yes, because we had
the railway came through.
Yes, I think it was 56, wasn't it? I've got it there somewhere in a book, but you probably crossed that. When they opened it, the electrification. Well, that gave jobs, but there were more jobs and there were people to work. The Snowy scheme was big then, and I do hear some migrants saying they went down to the Snowy because the Australians didn't want to do that work. But it was because there weren't enough Australians to go around. A lot of the fellows weren't all that fit when they came back from the war either to take on those sort of jobs, and I suppose it was a case of the fittest. But to get back to the Utah and the power station, we had the Germans and Austrians staying here, some of the women. They weren't migrants.
How did having the European women in the area, how did that affect you or other women in the area?
We had Air Force people here. You know, it was the people who were not staying for so long that would move on, or they were waiting for housing commission homes and so forth. Strangest thing, there were some Australians hadn't gone to war. They were the most critical of the Germans. I remember out at the clothesline once, one of the women swore at the German woman. Of course, she came into my husband, and he just gave her quiet. He was very understanding of women and saw them as getting the worst end of the stick, as well as being a respected man against with men, you know. Some of the German, well, a German soldier I know, he'd lost his eye. This was one working at Utah. He'd been an officer and he had the scar down the cheek. And still very defiant and declaring England had dropped the first bomb. So forth. He wasn't apologetic about the war, no way. But he'd come to my husband, show him all the photographs of his home and so forth. And he was a banker, actually, and he even in those days he was saying how already Germany had paid off most of her overseas debt already then in the 50s, you know. And that he was going on to Argentina, he thought, after this. They weren't migrants as such, this particular... Some of the Germans were. I remember the Austrian woman fell in love. She said, this is the nearest thing to the Rhine that she's seen in all of Australia. And she thought it was the most beautiful spot she'd ever been. And it makes you feel more sad when you think of that, to think that they did, well, to me, ruin the district, apart from the fact that they settle on the wrong spots, that the best agricultural land should have been kept as such. However, that's particularly as they want to populate more.
Yes.
I mean, the more you could feed.
And what about your children's education? Did they travel to the local school?
Yes, they went to the local school. There was about 110 pupils then in the primary school.
At Emu Plains?
Yes, Emu Plains, a little stone building, which is now the family history building. It's a little lovely little stone building built in 1877 there. And it was a very close community, and you know, there was a fire brigade, and the Progress Association was very much into the fore, and There were only two churches at the time, the Church of England and the Presbyterian, the little church around there, still there in front of the Eden Glassy retirement village. And there were flower shows. They put on wonderful things, there was a lot of talent in this area, musicians and local actors and so forth.